You're listening to Halford and Brough.
You have to be unafraid to make big decisions. And if you're somebody who's nervous with that, then you can't do the job.
Can't do it.
Good morning, Vancouver. 6:01 on a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. It is Halford. It is Brough. It is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
A-Dog, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. Hour one is brought to you by Johnstone's Barbecues. You don't pay more to shop with the experts at Johnstone's Barbecues. They're open 5 days a week with two locations to serve you. You can visit them on the internet at johnstones.com.
We're coming to you live from the Kintech studio, Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintech.net.
Guest list begins today with one of our favorites. ESPN's Greg Wyshynski is going to join us just a couple days out from the start of the Stanley Cup Final. Talk to Greg about that. All the news and notes from around the league. More hirings coming through. Greg will join us at 6:30 to talk about that. We're in June. Happy June. That sounded weird. Happy June, Jason.
Happy June, as they say.
As you know, it's a classic greeting. Happy June, everybody.
I was saying it to everybody on the way to work today, right. Yelling and randomly. Happy June. Yeah. Happy June.
Just waving. Yeah. It is June, so that means we are now in the month of the NHL entry draft. Ryan Kennedy is going to join us at 7:00 to talk prospects, who the Canucks might be able to take. At 11th overall, Ryan, of course, from the Hockey News. We've had him on the show numerous times before.
Why would it matter who the Canucks are taking at 11th overall since they're not going to draft there?
Well, we're going to do this dance, this exercise for the listeners out there. Yeah, and then I'll drop the bomb on Ryan at the end of the interview. And I said, ha-ha, nothing you said mattered because the Canucks aren't even going to draft at 11. No, that's good radio.
That'll be good for him. He'll appreciate
it. He'll really like that, actually. Yeah. 8:00, Jeff DeForest is going to join the show. He has been a sports talk radio host in the Miami area for 40 years.
40 years?
40 years. He's now on South Florida Live. So we're going to talk to him about I can't imagine that there's ever been a time like this in Miami sports where both teams that have a chance to be in their respective finals are in their respective finals. Of course, mm-hmm. The Miami Heat and the Florida Panthers. Miami Heat.
Underdogs in both of them, right?
Yeah. And in the case of the Heat, significant underdogs as they tip off tonight. The Heat Nuggets. What is this, my microwave? Heat Nuggets? Come on. This is going to be a tip-off tonight. You liked that one.
Workshopped that for 3 hours yesterday.
That was a week-long endeavor. I was hoping.
Just scratching it on a chalkboard.
The guys on CBS radio this morning were talking extensively about whether the Nuggets being in the NBA Finals were going to subconsciously spike Nugget sales throughout the greater U.S.,
It was a 4-hour segment.
It was a good segment.
They know they're not named after the chicken.
It was such a good segment, you stole it.
And I went and got nuggets on the way in. Okay, Jeff DeForest is going to join us at 8. Ryan Kennedy from the Hockey News at 7. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN at 6:30. That's what's happening. Laddie, let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. What happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it? You missed that?
What happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them online at bccsa.ca. We actually have a little bit of Canucks news.
We have some Canucks news?
Yeah, we do.
In what way?
We have a signing, Jet Wu. Congratulations to you. And we had an interview on behalf of the agent for Elias Pettersson, JP Barrie, speaking to The Athletic. Specifically Pierre LeBrun and Ryan Rashog, talking about where things are at with regards to Elias Pettersson's contract extension talks.
So the dance has started already.
The delicate dance is underway, my friend.
This negotiation that we've been talking about for a while already now, and we're going to be talking about a lot until it's absolutely done. This is our first little piece of direction, I suppose, at least for this offseason. And J.P. Barrie certainly didn't give us any reason to worry about the Elias Pettersson contract negotiation. But he also didn't suggest that this thing could be done as soon as possible. Like, for anyone, I think, hoping that it's July 1st and the Canucks have an announcement, because that is the first possible date that Elias Pettersson can sign a long-term extension with the Vancouver Canucks. So where's the press release? Where's the press release, Canucks? You might have to wait a little while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he acknowledged that the Canucks want to get together sometime this summer. But then he said, or early fall, at least, in the next few months, to try and talk about the future. He said, we've stayed in contact with the Canucks. Elias is thinking about it. Then he went on to say, I think it's going to happen. We're going to sit down this summer. We're going to talk about staying there long term. That is the plan right now. Mm-hmm. So that's encouraging. That's encouraging. There was nothing in there about Petey. You know, it could be something like, well, Petey has to consider where he wants to play for the future. This is his prime years we're talking about. He wants to win, et cetera, et cetera. He could have said that. In fact, he said they're clearly open to discussing a long-term deal. Now, I'm going to throw a question out to the listeners here. I'm going to throw out a question to everyone else here. Is it fair to say that the Canucks will be more motivated to get a deal done this offseason, like as soon as possible, mm-hmm. as compared to Petey? I just wonder just a little bit if Petey might slow play it a tiny bit just to put a little bit of pressure on the Canucks, because him and his agent will know that the fans will be sitting there going, like, when's he going to sign? When's mm-hmm. he going to sign? Get him signed.
Yep.
Don't you dare let him pull a Matthew Tkachuk and force his way out of Vancouver. The only reason I'd see for Petey to be, okay, let's get a deal done quickly, is if he's worried that his production might drop next season. You know, we've seen him go through funks before. It seems like a long time ago now, but it was only a couple of years ago that he went through a funk. Or the other one would be if he's worried about getting injured and he just wants the money. Like,
sure.
He just wants to have that, you know, massive contract signed, sealed, and delivered.
Yeah. Now, there's a few things to consider here. The first of which is, you know, back when Pettersson changed agencies and hired J.P. Barrie and J.P. Barrie's longtime buddy Pat Brisson, that was when we entered into that very long summer, and then you'll remember fall of negotiations,
yeah.
And it actually bled into training camp. He didn't sign his deal until the eve of the start of the season.
And,
so,
and it had an impact on the season.
It did, for sure. And it part of that was maybe you're going with a mega agency and they know how to play the field. I think the other part of this is what you were alluding to. Sitting and waiting puts pressure on the signing club, franchise team, whatever, the Vancouver Canucks. There's also the added element of when you're a restricted free agent, we've seen this time and time again, a lot of them wait to see how the market sets itself. There's no real rush. There never has been. You kind of want to see what other contracts come through the door. What are other guys doing? What are other guys signing for?
All the RFAs are going like, you go first.
Yeah.
No, you go first.
I think it was the summer of like Mitch Marner and Pierre-Luc Dubois, and they all just kind of sat there staring at one another,
yeah,
trying to figure out who was going to sign first. Now, the big difference here is that there's only a handful of really intriguing players, good, young, talented players in the NHL that fit the same mold as Pettersson. And that is, we're talking about guys that are coming off a second contract, which is a bridge.
Yeah.
The one that matches up almost identically, and unfortunately, it's an apples to oranges comparison because he's a defenseman and not a center, but it's Rasmus Dahlin in Buffalo.
Mm-hmm.
His Dahlin is also coming off, and he's not even coming off. He's going into the final year of a third 3-year bridge deal that he signed with the drafting club. And you would think that both Vancouver and Buffalo would move heaven and earth to keep Elias Pettersson and Rasmus Dahlin in the fold long term.
Definitely.
So there's one to keep an eye on, because I mean, Buffalo has already thrown down the verbal gauntlet in a good way, saying, like, we want to get this done. The challenge for us is to sign Rasmus Dahlin long-term. And I think the Canucks are in a very similar boat with Elias Pettersson.
Well, if I'm Canucks management, I want certainty on the Petey situation as soon as I possibly can.
Now, I agree.
That doesn't mean they should pay him whatever he wants, but there's no need to play hardball either. Like, there's no need to start the negotiations with a low ball offer, right? Like, there's
give him the old Horvat special.
Give him the Horvat special, right? Like, that you don't want to create hard feelings right off the bat. There's no need to do that. You know, people will say, well, it's a negotiations. That's how they go. Well, they don't necessarily have to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm the Canucks, think of, with this hanging out there, right? The future just, it looks murky without Pettersson signed long-term.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Canucks might be sitting there going, like, we're really, really, really confident that we're going to get him signed long-term, so we can plan accordingly. But if, for example, and I'm not saying this is going to happen. In fact, I don't think it is. Let's say Petey starts to waver a little bit. Let's say he's not signed heading into next season and the Canucks get off to another dreadful start.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And by the way, that's another reason to get him
signed
this offseason.
Before
right?
they can even screw
but
it up.
But let's say they do that. And then he's like, you know what? Like, I can't do this anymore. I want to win. I can't do this anymore. I'm gonna Dubois this thing, or I'm gonna Kachuk this thing, right? I'm gonna get out.
Sure.
And I'm out, right? And he forces a way out, because you can do that in the situation that he's in. You can do that. But and then all of a sudden you're Canucks management and going, like, every bit of planning that we did is now out the window.
Yeah. And we're not trying to be like doomsday preppers here.
No, this is just the importance of this contract. It's up there with other contracts that have been signed in history. You know, the Sedins, when they signed that contract, different situation because it was purely a UFA deal. But I mean, that was a very pivotal contract. The Luongo contract, it was a massive negotiation, didn't turn out ultimately the way the Canucks wanted, or maybe even at times Luongo. Like, that just goes to show how important these contract negotiations are.
We are living in the era of the emboldened NHL player and his desire to dictate where he wants to play hockey. For example, on Saturday, the Stanley Cup Final is going to be played between the Florida Panthers and the Vegas Golden Knights, featuring Matthew Tkachuk, who was so emboldened that he, you know, directed his own trade out of Calgary. On the other side, there's the Vegas Golden Knights and Jack Eichel, who directed his own way out of Buffalo by demanding a trade out of Buffalo. And if you're going to say, well, those are different because, you know, there's a loyalty factor here, and Petey wants to be here, and the Canucks want Petey, do not forget that Jack Eichel signed an 8-year, $80 million extension with Buffalo, and then shortly thereafter decided that he no longer wanted to be there. So I'm not saying that one means the other. I'm not saying it is a bit of apples and oranges, but just allow for the possibility that young players do want to be able to dictate where they want to go. Now, that might be the place they're currently playing, right? For Pettersson, his long term could be right here in Vancouver. Could also be somewhere else. And this isn't, again, trying to be a doomsday guy or trying to create headlines where there's not. This is just looking at the rest of the landscape and saying this could also apply here.
Yeah, so far it doesn't seem like it is one of those things.
Exactly.
So far it seems like he wants to sit down and genuinely talk to the Canucks about a long-term contract.
Mm-hmm.
But until it's done, you're looking at the future and going, okay, well, Pettersson is their best forward. He's a guy that we've been talking about in the Selke conversation. And the whole Tkachuk thing just leaves you in a state of understanding that these young players in the situations that they're in, and Petey is very close to unrestricted free agency, right? You can find a way to get out if he wanted to, if he badly wanted to. It's like his qualifying offer or whatever it is, and then you become unrestricted free agent. And then before that even happens, really, you just tell the team, I'm going to do this. And they say, okay, well, we're going to have to trade you. Like the Flames did not want to trade Tkachuk.
Yeah, Buffalo probably didn't want to trade Jack Eichel, but they had to.
Yeah, the Eichel thing is a little bit different, I think, because he did make that commitment. And
then he said, I regret this commitment.
Yeah, but I think the Eichel thing is different just because There was an injury in play there too. So there was disagreements about how the injury was handled. So that was a major factor there. That was a pretty unique situation because he had already agreed to stay in Buffalo. Like he had made the commitment that we want to see Elias Pettersson make to the Canucks and the Canucks to make to Elias Pettersson. And then it just went really badly. Like that could happen. I mean, it could still happen to anyone on the Canucks. Or hey, it could happen to McDavid in Edmonton, right? Like you're just like, I'm out of here. I'm sick of losing or whatever.
For the
right?
listeners
like,
out there, put it in the context of your regular life. Oftentimes you're asked to make a commitment to something, right? So there's two ways you go about it. Is one, you do a lot of diligent thought and research and say either right now I'm either deciding to be here long term or I'm deciding not to. The other one is you just kind of take a leap of faith. You're like, all right, you know, I'm not 100% sure how this is going to play out, but I'm going to give it a shot. You know, I can make it work. Those always end well. Definitely go with that approach.
You're freaking me out here.
Yeah, sorry. Okay, now, Elias Pettersson's been with the organization in 2017 when he was taken fifth overall. The following year, the Canucks, with their second-round pick, selected a guy by the name of Jet Wu. Well, Jet Wu signed a one-year, two-way contract extension with the Vancouver Canucks yesterday. Jason astutely pointed out in the notes that while the Canucks did send out a press release celebrating the Jet Wu extension, he didn't get the quote.
Yeah, he wasn't quote worthy
he
in
was
the
not.
Press release.
No Jim Rutherford quote, no Patrick Alvin quote, not even a Ryan Johnson quote.
Yeah,
not a single quote to be had.
You know the quotes in the press release that are clearly not written by the actual person that is supposed to have said them?
But they're attributed to that person.
But they're attributed to that person. Like, Jet is a very important player for us going forward. We've been very impressed with him in the last year down in Abbotsford, and we look forward to seeing him, blah, blah, blah. Jet Wu didn't get one of those.
If there's like a Mendoza line for those, I think Brisebois got one. So it's now the Brisebois line for quote.
Brisebois got one?
I'm pretty
sure. Got a quote?
I'm pretty sure he got a quote.
Oh, you can't just throw that around. You better make sure of that.
I'm on it. Don't worry, I'm on it.
But listen, we're being idiots here. Jet Wu did have a very impressive season last year in Abbotsford to the point that Ryan Johnson, the GM in Abbotsford, said, Jets put himself in a conversation to come and compete for a spot next year in Vancouver. Or worst case, I see him as a guy that's going to play games next year in Vancouver because of the growth and how far he came along here as a player, a person, and a professional. He's been a great story for us. He's taken a most massive step in forming out his identity as a pro. He's played a very physical game, skates very well, and his reads have improved immensely in the neutral zone. That is like high, high praise for a young defenseman who has not, since he's been drafted, progressed like a lot of Canucks fans. And I'm sure Jet Wu himself, he hasn't progressed like we wanted him to.
It is the Brisebois line, by the way. He did, in fact. And he got a lengthy
quote.
Oh. And he got an Alvin quote.
Well, of course he's getting an Alvin quote. That's the guy who he's the general manager. I don't know if you've heard that.
I would say that if I was him, I would have been happy with the Ryan Johnson quote.
Oh, Ryan Johnson quote.
In my press release.
Does he get a press? I don't know if he, yeah, okay, all right.
If he's going to Abbotsford, which is where Brisebois is going to spend the majority of his time.
So he did negotiate a little bit to make $100,000 next season in the AHL, if that's where he is, which is $30,000 more than he made last season. So he's going to get a bump regardless.
Nice.
You know, I don't know what to expect from Jet Wu next season at training camp. I'd be surprised if he made the Canucks out of training camp, but you never know.
Well, we've had Jeremy Colleton, Ryan Johnson, Chris Faber, the trifecta, the triumvirate of Abbotsford hockey, really. And all three of them essentially said that they expect to see Jet Wu playing in the NHL next year in some capacity, be it the token call up when someone gets hurt or maybe he works his way in, but across the board, again, the big three, Faber, Ryan Johnson, and Jeremy Colleton, they all kind of said, like, of all the players that Abbotsford had this year, maybe nobody had as much growth in his game as Wu. Like, yeah. He really came along. He won the club's Unsung Hero Award, which is great. Those are always good awards to win. And I think maybe he's a cautionary tale about expecting too much from prospects right away and then not being super excited when the development isn't there right away. Like, it looked like, I mean, I saw a couple people on Twitter mentioning this yesterday, like, maybe his value as a prospect at Flatlander had been gone because, don't forget, as a 37th overall pick in your draft class. There's
I wrote him off in my mind. I didn't really think of him as a player for the Canucks going forward. And, and we'll see how he pans out. He needs to keep making progress, right? Mm-hmm. Like don't stall out now. But man, if he could pan out and provide the Canucks even third pair minutes, even a 7-8 defenseman, if he's physical, you know how much we've been talking about how much more grit and toughness the Canucks need.
Yeah.
If Jet Wu can be that guy and he can do it for cheap and he's got youth and he's got enthusiasm, sign me up for that.
Yeah.
What happened at BC Place last night?
It was a record-setting night at BC Place last night, guys. And it came courtesy of the Vancouver Whitecaps.
What was the record? It wasn't the attendance.
Nope, definitely wasn't that. Attaboy, we always got to throw in the shots. I love it. We have yet
what
to go.
What kind of game did 13,000 people see last night?
Well, Jason, we thought that we had seen a long-standing record. We thought, oh, Pedro Vite scores 15 seconds into the match yesterday in an eventual 6-2 win over the Houston Dynamo at BC Place. Okay. So we're thinking, this is amazing. It's the fastest goal in franchise history. 15 seconds in. That's amazing.
That is pretty amazing.
Well, it only lasted for a half because 10 seconds into the second half, the Caps broke their own record and set an MLS record.
What, did they just shoot on goal from the start?
They obviously have a set play off a kickoff. Or
they should use that set play more.
It's not really like a okay, to be fair,
They should do it every time.
Yes. Every play. Set play.
Just so the footy enthusiasts won't kill the parlance. It's not a set play in terms of dead ball striking.
Right.
This is from open play in the early stages. It's a long and high lofted ball basically to the edge of the 18. So Brian White can try and get under cuz he's good in the air. He's a big physical guy. And I think it's to try and catch a team maybe napping at the start.
So does Brian White run down there like a wide receiver?
Yeah. he beelines it. I mean, they give him a little bit of time to get down there. They're like, we'll pass the ball a couple times, but you go. Get deep and basically pin yourself onto the last defender. Then they play for a knockdown. Then they win that knockdown, and then they score. So Brian White was actually on the receiving end of the second one, 10 seconds into the second half. First team in MLS history to score a goal in the first 15 seconds of each halves. It was a pretty remarkable night, a really crazy game, as mentioned, 6-2 final.
6-2 win over Houston. Mm-hmm. They had a game earlier in the season where they smoked someone with a bunch of goals.
Montreal, 5-0.
5-0, right? Yeah. So all of a sudden, you look at the standings or the stats in MLS, and the Whitecaps are what? One of the highest scoring teams?
And currently sitting sixth spot in the Western Conference, like in a playoff
position.
And yet
they have not won a game on the road.
They're terrible on the road. They're absolutely dreadful. It's awful. And I think this dates
back
to last year.
What's the deal with that?
Some say it's the travel. I don't really put a lot of thought and merit into that argument because everybody has to travel in MLS and other teams seem capable of winning a game on the road. The schedule, you know what? If they're going to complain about the schedule, they better stop because their schedule right now is about as difficult as it gets. They're in a stretch where they're playing 5 matches in the span of like 16 days. So if you thought your schedule was bad before, wait till now. I'm not really sure. You can't pinpoint one particular thing. They've had some bad breaks on the road. They went to St. Louis last weekend in a very winnable game against a not great team. And Thomas Hassall completely fell apart in net.
Right.
And the officiating was awful. But there's never been any sort of rhyme or reason as to why they can't get it done on the road. I think it's almost like with the Boston Celtics in the playoffs. Like, why can you not win games
at home?
At home. But you win so many on the road. It's just kind of one of those things. I know there should be a better explanation. But on the pitch, I am kind of intrigued about what this team could do this year. I know that they've suffered from really poor attendance, and we brought up the BC Place issue. It seems to be rearing its head this season in particular.
I mean, I watched a bit of the game last night, and as fun as it was on the pitch, it was jarring to see how many empty seats there were.
Like they're
jarring.
I mean, we've talked to Axel about this on the show, and we put the BC Place question to him, and his answer was very political but also very telling. He basically said it's the best home that we have available to us right now.
Yeah.
That's was paraphrasing, but it's what he said. So in light of that, or in spite of that, they need to put together wins, plain and simple. Mm-hmm. They're at the point now where promise and intrigue of players coming in and a collection of talent that doesn't get it done ain't good enough anymore.
And they got to win the Canadian Championship.
They need
again.
To win the Canadian yep. Championship. There's the League Cup in MLS, another internal competition that starts this year, where they're going to play a big powerhouse club from Mexico, Club León. So that's going to be a big challenge for them. And they need to make the playoffs, and they need to do something in the playoffs. It'd be great if they had a home date in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that's not out of the realm of possibility right now. But the time has come where they've had Ryan Gauld long enough. They've had Julian Gressel long enough. And by the way, he's a fantastic player. Gressel is really, really good. Pair of goals last night. They've got about four or five players that might be some of the best players that the franchise has ever had, honestly. Kubas is a really talented player. Gauld, Gressel. They've got good talent. They need to be able to have something to win some fans back just in terms of results. I think that's where they're at as a club right now.
What was their most successful season?
The one where there was some good years under Robbo, but it really peaked where they went to the playoff against Portland and then completely pooped the bed.
Seattle, you mean?
Both years. The one year that they lost to Portland, one year that they lost to Seattle.
Right, yeah,
those
were
the two best.
Because the Seattle year, at least they had that big home win over San Jose.
Yes, but they also played stylistically not an attractive brand of football.
Right. Yeah.
What they're playing under Vanny right now, at times when it's on, it's great to watch.
Mm-hmm.
There's a relentless level of attack. There's a really high work rate. Gauld is great to watch because he's so small.
Yeah.
And he just runs around trying to disrupt everything. Like, mm-hmm. he's got a really great engine. I really enjoy watching him play. And they've kind of embodied that. They've made him the captain. And when he's out there, he's leading the charge. So if, and it's a big if, because I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but the Whitecaps have had a history of bottling it when these opportunities have arisen. But
yeah,
if
they really have.
If they can build on this and actually go forward and show that, oh, maybe this team is going to do something in the playoffs. Maybe this team will be able to lift trophies.
Maybe this team is not mid, as
maybe
the
they're
say.
Not mid. That would that's gonna be
as the kids say.
You know how the Canucks had unfinished business on their shirts? It's gonna be Whitecaps. Definitely not mid.
Yeah, that's their
slogan. We are not mid, kids.
Greg Wyshynski is gonna join us next. A little hockey talk. The Stanley Cup final starts on Saturday in Vegas, and Brad Treliving today will have his introductory press conference in Toronto as the new general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. We'll talk to Greg about that and much more on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
Everything Canucks before and after the games. Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
On a Thursday. Happy Thursday, everybody. Halford Brough, Sportsnet 650. Halford and Brough of the Morning is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. We are in hour one of the program. As that music suggests, Greg Wyshynski is going to join us to really kick off hour one here. Hour one of the Halford and Brough show on Sportsnet 650 is brought to you by John Stone's Barbecues. You don't pay more to shop with the experts at John Stone's Barbecues. They're open 5 days a week with two locations to serve you. Visit them online at johnstones.com. To the phone lines we go. It's Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Wish. How are you?
Good, good. The barbecue thing made me remember the Brent Burns story I wrote, which now feels like it was 7 years ago, but it was actually just 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
So he's a bit of a grill man, that Brent Burns. He likes to cook game meat for all of his teammates, and they say he's quite adept at it.
So, yeah, for those that don't know, Brent Burns, was it when he was in San Jose, he had like an actual zoo in his house?
Pretty much.
Yeah. He has like a ranch in Texas now where he has all these like animals, both exotic and also ones that he, you know, kills to put on a flaming hot grill.
Yes.
So it's a heck of a thing, really. And I was really happy to write that story. He's an odd duck. I got to recap the story about the time he was bit by a cheetah at the Columbus Zoo, which was if you missed the Brent Burns thing, you can find it at ESPN.com. I highly recommend it. It's a heck of a thing.
Well, the cheetah's probably taking revenge for all the other animals that have ended up on Brent Burns's grill.
Yeah, right. The cheetah's in self defense. The cheetah's like, I will not be a hot dog.
Wish, what do you expect to hear from Brad Treliving today when he's introduced as Maple Leafs general manager?
I expect to hear whatever Brendan Shanahan wants for the Leafs is what I expect to hear out of Brad Treliving's mouth. I'm not saying this man is a puppet. I'm saying this man will be collaborative. He'll work with Shanahan. But at the end of the day, I do not find it at all ironic that a general manager who basically had ownership pick a coach for his team in Daryl Sutter is going to a team in which the team president just had to part ways with his GM because GM A, wanted to make as much money as him, and B, wanted pretty much as much power as him.
Yeah.
So I think Treliving is an underling. I think Treliving will understand the vision of whatever it is that Shanahan and the team wants. And look, I think one of the most interesting things about Treliving and this Leafs job, in all of the coverage that I've seen from Toronto about this, they all kind of like point to his lack of playoff success in Calgary and all this other stuff. Are we going to ignore the fact how hard it is to be the GM in Calgary? Like, retaining talent, attracting talent. Like, it's a totally different world when you are the GM of the Toronto Maple Leafs versus the GM of the Calgary Flames insofar as trying to build a winner. And I think all things considered in that market, he did a pretty good job at that.
It's interesting what you bring up about Shanahan, though, because part of me wonders – because the Leafs have so many decisions to make before, you know, the Anchi draft or July 1st or whatever, there's a lot on their plate for that organization. I wonder if some of the decisions have just already been made by Brendan Shanahan and he's going to say, okay, we're going to keep the coach or we're going to trade one of these core four guys. Now you just go execute it.
Yeah, my jaw dropped when I heard Elliot reporting that, like, one of the things they were telling candidates was that Sheldon Keefe was still going to be the coach. I mean, if you asked me before the playoffs, like, the probability of Kyle Dubas not being there, but Sheldon Keefe still being there, I would have been like, that's like 5%. And that guy is, for all of the hand-wringing about what's wrong with the Leafs and why they can't win, I mean, a lot of it does track back to the coach, I think, at the end of the day, and what happens or does not happen in the postseason. So that was a bit of a surprise. But I think you're right. I think ultimately, you know, Treliving or whoever comes into that job firmly understands where the organization sits when it comes to, say, breaking up the core four and other kind of monumental decisions that lie ahead. And look, like, I know there's been a lot of talk about Austin Matthews and, like, what does this mean for him and what is his future going to look like and yada, yada, yada. I've long believed he'll stay in Toronto. I think he likes it there. I think he likes the organization. I'm not sure if, like, the change of one personality to another at GM is going to make any difference for him ultimately. So maybe the decision is just, you know, keep the core together. If Austin's going to be there, keep the rest of them there and just keep pressing forward.
So do you think the biggest change this offseason in Toronto could be just the general manager's change?
Yeah, I mean, it looks that way. I mean, he's going to be tasked with building out around the core. And, you know, one of the things you can definitely say about Calgary, and I think this was laid bare this year after Tkachuk and Gaudreau were gone, is that the man knows how to build a supporting cast. Now, unfortunately, when you don't have a couple of stars in the middle of that supporting cast, we've talked about before, like the idea of a solar system without a sun all of a sudden, there's just like a random collection of planets circulating around nothing. That's kind of what the Flames felt like this year. But that's not to say that they didn't have strong supporting players on that team. And so I think that the idea that he can, you know, look at this team and diagnose what's necessary for it to, you know, level up. I think Treliving's an interesting guy for it. Here's my thing on him, man. Like, of the available options, I think he was probably the best. And I don't buy the idea that he's a retread. I've seen that name, that word thrown about a few times about Treliving. And to me, my rule for retread is it's your third time. If it's your third time, you're a retread, except if you're Lou Lamoriello, in which case you're a genius,
right,
and you're never a retread.
Do you think there's going to be a lot of player movement this offseason, just because, do you think a lot of teams are going to look at the list of unrestricted free agents and go, oh, not much there. We better look at some trades.
You're not finding too many solutions on the open market. I think there will be a lot of movement. I think the clarity that we have now about the cap going up in the near future, I think will help with some of that player movement. And don't forget, guys, Copycat League, as I wrote about in my column last week, I think, or maybe 2 weeks ago on ESPN, don't forget how many teams will try to make their own Matthew Tkachuk trade in an overly aggressive way, not understanding A, why it happened, or B, the lessons from it. But I'm sure there are going to be some. I mean, Kyle Dubas already referenced it in his fateful press conference. The idea that that's one bit of inspiration for teams is what the Panthers and Flames did with that trade, and I'm sure someone else will try to attempt it, not understanding that there's only one Matthew Tkachuk. But don't forget about that potential copycatism happening this summer.
Let's turn our attention now to the coaching carousel as it continues to spin throughout the league. Now, you said that it's the third time that you're a retread, right? That's correct.
Correct.
Does that apply to coaches as well?
No, coaches is 4 to 5.
4 to 5. Okay.
The first time you kind of figure out what you're doing, right?
Sure.
So when Pete DeBoer was in Florida, for example, and then he goes to San Jose, then he goes to Vegas, and now he's in Dallas, and he wasn't a retread in Vegas, but now he's a retread in Dallas. So
okay.
That's how the coaching thing works. But why? Who are you asking about? Peter Laviolette, who is going to be having coached half the league at this point if he gets hired?
Lavi's definitely in the conversation. I want to know if John Hines has entered the chat, because as the former coach of your New Jersey Devils and then formerly of the Nashville Predators, it sounds like he's kind of vaulted into the running for the Rangers job.
All right, let's break this down. Okay, your first job, you don't know what you're doing. You got to get fired, and then that's just what happens. Like unless you're like John Cooper, right?
Okay,
like
you're a
unicorn.
Right.
Second job, okay, you learned a thing or two. You're Andrew Brunette. You've learned from your mistakes. You're going to be better. You're going to be a better tactician in the playoffs. You're not overwhelmed by the moment, and then you get fired again.
Okay.
And then your third job, this is where you're going to win. Oh, my God, you've figured it all out.
You're right in your prime.
Put the pedal down. We're on our way. We're Bruce Cassidy in Vegas. We're playing for the Cup.
Yeah.
We learned all the lessons, and then you get fired again, and now you're a retread. So that's the larva to butterfly life cycle of a coach. And so John Hines is in his butterfly stage, man. John Hines is like, I've coached Jersey. I toiled there during a rebuild. I went to Nashville. Things didn't work out. Now I'm going to go over to the Rangers, and we're going to run this thing to the Stanley Cup.
I wish that you were in a room explaining this to John Hines. Be like, you there, you beautiful butterfly. Fly with the New York Rangers. Is he going to get that job?
It sounds like, based on everything I've heard, that the timeline was certainly interrupted by his sudden availability.
Yeah.
Although you have to imagine that Drury was probably keeping his eye on that situation, just because when one of the greatest coaches of all time takes over a team, chances are he is probably going to insert his own coach into that situation and not stick with the guy that's already there, unless he has to do so for financial reasons. So I imagine Drury was already kind of like side-eyeing the Hines thing to see if it happens. And it does sound like, from what I've heard around the team, that like it's a real thing, and that he's in the mix, and nobody would be surprised if it ends up being him. And honestly, like I'm not the biggest John Hines guy. I think there's just some flaws in how he approaches the game, and I'm not sure if he's a natural fit for what the Rangers need. But I'd take him over Laviolette at this point. I think Laviolette's kind of like, okay, we've heard it. Well, we need to hear from you behind the bench. And maybe it's time to go to the next thing. And so if I was the Rangers, I would probably take Hines over Laviolette, but there are probably other options I'd take before both of them.
So, Wish, I imagine there's a lot of coaches out there that would love to coach the New York Rangers. How many want to coach Columbus?
I don't know, because, like, I'd love to. I think that's a good job, to be honest with you, man. Like, they're gonna end up with a decent draft pick this year. They've got some good young players in the roster. They've got some pieces to build around, obviously, in Gaudreau and Laine and Werenski. Everybody forgets about Zach Werenski. Dude was injured all year. Like that's a really, really good defenseman. One that was hovering around the top 10 in our player poll that we did earlier this year on ESPN. So, I mean, like they've got some pieces there. I think it's a good market. I feel like it's quietly a desirable job. If only because, I mean, as you sort of inferred with your question, the expectations are set in a much more different way than they are with the Rangers. I mean, you can grow with the Blue Jackets for a few years and be comfortable to know that you're going to have employment. Gerard Gallant just got gassed after 2 years at the Rangers. So,
That
guy was a Jack Adams nominee.
That's
so, like,
true.
You know, like, I think there's a certain amount of expectation there that might be pleasing to somebody, a veteran coach who's like, you know, I'd like to kind of like stay in this job for more than 50 seconds.
Do you think we're going to see any more announcements in the next couple of days? Because the NHL doesn't love it when there's announcements during the Stanley Cup final. There's still the GM vacancy in Pittsburgh and a few coaching vacancies.
Yeah, I have to imagine the Rangers vacancy and the Penguins vacancy will be resolved by the weekend, I think. I don't know that for sure. It's just the vibe I get. And if that's the case, then that's good. Because like you said, they don't like to have a lot of news breaking during the Cup. They like the focus to be on the Cup. And they kind of like nudge the teams not to do that. I'll never forget like being at the Cup final between the Lightning in Chicago, I think it was, and the Penguins ownership thing like blew up between like Burkle and Lemieux.
Oh, right.
And like literally happens, like everybody's on their phone as Bettman is walking into the room to the State of the NHL address. And so like, you know, here he's up there thinking we're going to, revenues are strong and the game has never been better. And, you know, all people want to talk about is like, are the Penguins going to have to fold? So it's like, they never like it when there's like big news that breaks at the wrong time.
How do you imagine Gary Bettman is going to answer any questions about the Arizona Coyotes?
Well, that's a great question because, like, I'm intrigued to hear what he has to say too. The vote certainly didn't go their way. I think he's obviously not going to be happy about that, and I wonder what he'll express insofar as his thoughts on why it didn't go their way. But I mean, this idea that now they've just simply turned their attention to another place that will require another public vote is kind of astounding. And so we haven't really heard from him. I mean, we've heard some dribs and drabs of statements from the NHL, but we haven't heard from him unscripted on this Coyote situation quite yet. And you know, we'll hear it soon. So I am intrigued by that. I think he'll probably double down on the idea that, you know, they're not in a relocation place. As a league, and then kind of like double down on Alex Morello being a good owner for the team and there being a plan in place, but who knows? Maybe not. Maybe he's just at his wit's end with the situation. Although I doubt that. Like we've talked about this for years, man. Like this is his white whale. Like yeah. He is going to fight until the end of his commissionership to keep that team in that market. And it's not simply because the market is good, and it is good. I think that's a successful team on the ice there could really be a transformative thing. And they could, with the right arena and the right team, could really make a killing there. But it's also just because he's spent so much personal capital and time and blood and treasure in trying to keep that team there through court proceedings and votes and everything else that I don't think he's not a guy that takes a lot of L's, and this would be an L for him, I think.
Halpern and I were joking that, do you remember when the vote first turned bad and it looked like the Coyotes were going to lose it, and then they did lose it, and that night the NHL released a bit of a curt statement and basically said, like, we're disappointed and we'll have to see what the future holds for the Arizona Coyotes. Halpern and I were joking that like the next day the NHL got together and said, all right, we got to pull ourselves together and get refocused on this and start saying like the future is still in Arizona. Like we had a little bit of a blip. We didn't hold fast. And we had a lot of people out there wondering if this was finally it for Arizona, but you know, we got to pull it together. Do you think there's maybe a deal to be had with the new Phoenix Suns owner?
No. Again, like that building is not good for hockey. Is the first thing that I would say about that deal. And secondly, like the reason Alex Morello is owning this team is to do what he was trying to do in Tempe, which is to build an arena and a casino and a whole thing. And like, that's not his passion. I don't think necessarily is to just be a tenant. His passion is to leverage this team into something much more spectacular and grandiose. So that's why they're continuing to kind of check on all these different places around the state to see if maybe they can, you know, build his Xanadu there, I guess. But the statement from the NHL, I think, was you're right. It didn't have any sort of forward thinking momentum about the future of the franchise. And I've heard, you know, partly that it was disappointment, but I've also heard like they weren't really sure what the Coyotes were going to do next. Like the Coyotes are so all in on this that I don't think the NHL was really privy to this. Oh, by the way, there's a dilapidated shopping mall a couple towns over. Maybe we could put a thing there. And like, I don't think they knew that at that point. So they didn't really know what to say at that point.
Sell the listeners on watching the Stanley Cup final. What's the most intriguing thing for you?
Oh my God, this final is great. Like it's two really competitive teams that play very, very hard. It's one team that has had one of the most impressive runs through a conference we've ever seen in upsetting the Bruins and, you know, winning a four overtime game against the Hurricanes and knocking out the Leafs to the point where they had to like blow up their GM. The Panthers' run to the final has been incredible. It's absolutely incredible. And they play really exciting hockey. I mean, there's no bigger star in the NHL right now than Matthew Tkachuk. And the Bobrovsky story is great. Like, the Panthers are a great story. And Vegas on the other side, I mean, like, again, you have this incredible, intriguing mix of veteran players that they've, you know, made some really controversial and painful decisions to bring aboard at the expense of fan favorites. But then you also have, like, five or six of the original Golden Misfits on this team that sort of are the base for everything that they do. Marchessault and Carlson and Carrier and Smith and players like that. So, you know, if you love that Vegas team from 2018, like, a lot of those guys are still here. So,
yeah.
You know, you'll have an amazing atmosphere in Vegas. You'll have a really intriguing atmosphere in Florida. You'll have two places that'll look really pretty on TV. Like, it's going to be an aesthetically pleasing series that I think is going to be a very competitive series before Vegas wins in six.
Do you think whoever is crowned, there's going to be some owners that go to their general managers or the president of hockey ops and be like, act more like those teams, take some swings, go out there and take some chances?
Sure, and that's great. If that's the lesson learned, that's great. Don't try to do the Tkachuk trade, because there's only one Tkachuk, and it's a complete misreading as to why Huberdeau and Uyghur were available, I think. You know, let's not pretend that this is some sort of masterstroke from Brad Treliving living at the negotiating table. It's basically like Florida didn't want to have Uyghur anymore, and when they saw Tkachuk was available, they're like, yeah, we'd be willing to give up Huberdeau for that. So, if boldness is the lesson from these playoff runs, that's great. That's wonderful. That's good for the league. That means more movement. I think for me, like, no matter who wins, one, it's super exciting because it's their first cup in franchise history. And rare is the Stanley Cup final where we get an opportunity to have that. And B, whoever wins, it is going to be an absolutely decadent cup celebration. I mean, you were either talking about oiled up bodies in Fort Lauderdale or the Strip. I mean, it is going to be eyes wide shut when they have these cup parades, and it's going to be beautiful.
Well, I hope none of the hockey media is oiled up after this one. I don't want to see that at all.
Come on. Were you guys at the draft in Fort Lauderdale?
Oh, yeah.
When they had it there?
Yeah.
When all the pasty white Canadians showed up and all the people that were like, you know, Florida shouldn't have a team. They have to give away tickets. And then they're at the pool with their oil on, and then they're just like, Florida should have six teams. We can find a place in Ocala for one.
Yeah, that was awesome. I went swimming every day in the ocean.
It was great.
Of that draft, and people were walking by and like, do they have sun in Canada?
Because
you're
nothing,
very
nothing,
white.
Nothing turns around a cynical Canadian journalist more than being on site in a great American city. Same thing with Nashville. Nashville, why should they have a team? They throw catfish on the ice 2 hours on Broadway. We've got to move the Leafs here. Like, this is incredible.
Hey, Wish, thanks a lot for doing this today, bud. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the start of the Stanley Cup Final. We'll do this again next week.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Greg Wyshynski from ESPN here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Yeah, it's a funny time. It's a funny little time. I think because of who's playing in this series and how the conference finals really didn't resonate, let's be honest, with a lot of people, the conference finals weren't good.
Yeah, they stunk.
I think that this series is going to be a little bit underwhelming in terms of the buildup, and we're seeing that already. It doesn't start till Saturday, and not a lot of people are talking about it. But I think once the games get underway, it's going to be...
Hopefully it drags some people back, because I think a lot of people were just like, okay, well, I'm done watching hockey.
Like, what this series really...
We're into summertime.
You know what this series needs,
right? It really feels like that, like more so than in previous years. It feels like we're already in summer. Hockey's over.
It needs something like controversial to happen in the first game.
Yeah. A lot of overtimes, which both these teams have dallied in throughout the playoffs. That would help.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly...
It needs some violence.
Tkachuk is going to be that guy.
Yeah. It needs to get nasty. That's what draws in the casual fan when there's... These narratives that draw out, we'll get our 2011 mention out of the way. Like, that thing was nasty right from the start, and it drew in a lot of casual viewers.
I was going to ask Wish about this, but we ran out of time. Matthew Tkachuk is the face of the NHL right now.
Right now, yes.
He's the.
I mean, I disagree with Wish that they play exciting hockey. I don't think they play exciting hockey.
I could get on board with his argument in that every game is exciting because they're all close.
They have their moments.
The way it ends,
they play spurts of exciting hockey.
Yeah, they play spurts.
Not like consistently.
But I'd rather watch Vegas play.
That's a stylistic thing, though.
Yeah.
I mean, they counterpunch and they do it pretty well.
They counterpunch.
Yeah. But they also, I don't know if they allow themselves to be caved in, but oftentimes mm-hmm. they will have long, long extended periods of time where they don't have possession of the puck and they're giving up chances.
Well, that's why their goalie's the favorite to win the Conn Smythe, right?
You know, Wish had a piece up. It's up right now on ESPN, and he asked a bunch of the voters. They had Tkachuk ahead of Bobrovsky, which I was like, I don't know about that. I'm sure Laddie disagrees.
I just hope he can keep it rolling. That's a long layoff for a guy who was on a heater.
Yeah, I know.
Bobrovsky?
Yeah.
His muscles have seized up.
He's got to have a good final if he wants to win it, right? He can't just get the final.
For sure.
That is my biggest concern right now, is that all the good vibes and good feelings that Florida had just didn't go away.
I kind of hope Eichel wins the Conn Smythe for Laddie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I'll be on this show anymore. That's it for me.
And the Blue Jays continue to struggle.
I'm out on sports.
The beginning of June marks the start of the Stanley Cup playoffs. The end of June marks the NHL entry draft. Joining us next, Ryan Kennedy from the Hockey News. As we look ahead, it's now June. Happy June, everybody. You're hearing it more and more. Ryan Kennedy from the Hockey News is going to join us to talk all things NHL draft as we look ahead to the end of the month and all the things that the Canucks will or maybe won't be doing at the draft. You're listening to the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650.
They're talking about oiled up bodies in Fort Lauderdale or the Strip.
Grease me up, woman!